if renunciation wasn't my path, what was it? It became what's known as karma yoga, or the path of action. And the path of action means you take just what your life is right now, just what you're doing every day, just as you're doing it, and make all of it into your vehicle for awakening. Use it all. Washing a dish, driving a car, getting upset at a supermarket, being late, being early, having a cold, dying of cancer. I mean, you can have anyone you want. I don't mean you can have anyone you want, but each of us has one. And it all becomes the stuff you work with. For me, giving this lecture is the stuff I work with. This is my practice. If I get caught in the drama of thinking I'm giving this lecture exclusively, forget it. We both lost. I made you them. Yoga means union, and karma means the nature of the unfolding laws. And when you put it together as a practice or a path, it means using the unfolding of the stuff to come into yoga or union with it all. So it's using your karma to come into yoga, would be the technique. I've been doing adobe the last 3 days, building an adobe house in New Mexico, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, with my colleague Jai. And you lift these bricks that are made of mud, and you put mud down, then put them down. And I work with three guys that are Mexican, Latino, Chicano. And they speak very little English, so we don't talk a lot. We just work side by side. I haven't done manual labor in that long. I'm working with these people, and I'm busy using making adobe bricks to get to God. They're just doing adobe bricks, see? See, they're making like $7 or $8 an hour. They got bambinos, they've got cars breaking down, they got no health insurance, they got no old age pension. They're supporting their old parents in Mexico. I mean, it's an interesting life. And they come to work at 8 in the morning, and they go home at 5 at night, and they do this all their lives, and that's what they do. Working around them, I have become more and more joyful. Because there's a way in which they are doing the truth of their being. They are honoring their family, they're honoring their body, their work, their role, and they work to eat. I mean, they're very connected in a certain way to the harmonies of the universe. And there's a certain way that they're doing their dharma and they're at peace with it. And I thought about all the other criteria I have for the path of action. I thought, don't be identified with being the actor. And I watched them day after day, you know, buttering a brick and putting it down and then filling it and doing it. And I watch, they're not busy doing that. They're just, that's what they do all day. Like you drive a car, you're not busy driving the car. How do you do, what do? I'm driving a car. You drive the car, you're talking, you're thinking, you're... And then another criteria of the path of action is you are not attached to the fruits of the action. Meaning they're not busy wondering how it's going to come out. They just do it. And they do it as well as they can, and it comes out as it comes out. I mean, last night it rained. I thought maybe all the bricks will melt. And they go, some of the edges are torn, they do something. I mean, it's just, they're in harmony with the way of things. They're not that attached to the outcome. I thought, well, what's the difference? What is it? Are they on a spiritual path? Well, yes, everybody is. The added thing that I've been trying to understand is the one of more than one plane of reality. That to do something with a conceptual model of what that reality is, that puts it in perspective, is what you need in addition to make it karma yoga. It's the way in which you're shifting planes of reality to be, as Christ said, in the world but not of the world. And it's a creative tension you learn how to hold on to. They have a love of God. They're Catholic. They have a love of God. But it isn't a conscious interface at that moment in a way that's freeing them. They're happy. But there is something else that some people can do, and some of them may be doing that. I don't know them well. I can't talk to them yet. That is understanding that the only game in town is the game of awakening out of the imbalance in which you've been caught in your separateness. That's the only game. That's what all religions are about. And that in order to awaken, you get so hungry to come back into that balance, not to go back into the oneness where you deny your humanity. That isn't free. To be free in form, not in spite of form. To come back into the one and then delightfully manifest as the many. And knowing that's the game in town, then you start to, maybe you do it on Sunday mornings. Maybe you do it on when you read a holy book. Ultimately, you do it with every breath. You do it when you go to the toilet. You do it when you cook the meal. You do it all. It's all a process. And you're suffering, so what'll it teach me about where my mind's holding on? I mean, I spent years with long hair, you know, combing it over my bald spot. I was busy not being bald. It was finally just better to be bald, you know, and then I... It's a delight being with all of you. You're all almost as nutty as I am. Some of you are thinking, who the hell is, what is, I don't know, but it's fun. The scary thing as you open into that part of you that has no definition is you begin to realize you're in love with everyone. And it's really scary because you have habits of mind of what you're supposed to do when you feel that feeling. You're supposed to collect them, you know, keep them at home, possess them, like you're going to run out, you know. That's far out. I love you. Come live with me. I mean, then what's going to happen if you love anyone else? You know, it's going to get so crowded. So you realize you got to change your patterns of behavior. When you love somebody, you can't make such a big deal out of it. Of course you love somebody. Why don't you love everybody? More interesting, finally, is who you don't love. Like for a long time, I've talked about this many times, I couldn't deal with Caspar Weinberger. So I took his picture and I put it on my puja table. And I had Christ and Buddha and Mary and Ananda Maya and Caspar Weinberger. And in the morning, you know, I'd light incense and I'd, good morning, Buddha. Good morning, Christ. Ah, Maharaji. Oh, hello, Caspar. And I'd see how far I had yet to go, you know, I mean. And they're all God in drag. What am I carrying on for, you know? It's like. There's a great line in the Tao Te Ching that says, truth waits for eyes unclouded by longing. If you want to see how things are, you can't want anything, even to see how things are.
There's a funny Western thing we do, is we turn the spiritual journey into an achievement. And we turn it into something that's in time. I've got to get enlightened. I've got to get there soon. I've got to do good things to get there. It's an achievement that I will accomplish. How enlightened are you? How enlightened are you? When, you know, when did you have your last mystical experience? And I've experienced, just this year, it just happened to me again. I can feel how the trap works. To give you the short form, Back in the early 70s, when I said to my guru, how will I get enlightened? He said, feed people. And I thought that the translator lost it somehow, because that wasn't very interesting. So I said, how will I know God? And he said, serve people. Now, if you go to India and you hang out with Westerners that are India, and they've all got these trips, they're meeting these esoteric gurus up in the Himalayas who are giving them secret mantras and special initiations that they can't talk about. And there's a whole mystique about the spiritual journey, and to go to your teacher and sit at his feet and have him tell you to feed people and serve people, you wanted something much more exquisite. And the meditators all seemed like such a, you know, a high lot. So I really wanted to meditate, and I figured, what does my guru know? He's just an old fat man. And so I will meditate. And so I went and meditated, and I got incredibly high meditating. And at the end of one of my meditation periods in Bodh Gaya, I worked out a deal with a beautiful meditation teacher named Anagarika Manindra, that he would be up in the mountains in the summer in this little town, and he would be willing, if I came up with a few friends, to guide us in a, and I thought, I'll have my own meditation master for summer. I mean, what an accomplishment. So I went ahead and I found a house and arranged for a roof to be put on it and a cistern. And when I met my guru, which was, you just did by chance, when I met him, I said, I'm going to meditate with a meditation master. And he said, if you desire, which was really creepy. I mean, what do you mean if I desire? Isn't it good? He's supposed to say, oh, wonderful, very, very good. But I got defiant, and I thought, yes, I desire, so I'll show him. So, come the summertime, I went to Kosani, and we all got settled and got our pots and pans and everything. We were waiting for Manindra. He was to come on Friday. And Thursday, a telegram arrived from Manindra saying, due to circumstances of health in the family, I won't be coming this summer. So that was the end of the meditation teacher, you see. And so then we were in a house up on a hill looking down into the village of this little tiny village, and I started to see that each busload was depositing Westerners. Till pretty soon there were, looked like about 30 Westerners down the village, and I said to the group, let's not go down there, have nothing to do with them. You know, we're going to get holy, and they're irresponsible and rascals. But we did get down to dinner once, and we said, what are you all doing here? And they said, well, Maharaji said, go be with Ramdas. So fury ran through me. He's undercutting my meditation practice. I'm a meditator. What is he doing to me? So there was an empty ashram there, and so we all moved in there, and for the summer we did practices together, and I was guiding an ashram, and I came back and I walked into Maharaj, and he was giggling and giggling. He pulled my beard and he said, Ram Dass meditation teacher. So the second time I had met him, this was back in 68, he said to me, you know Gandhi? And I said, yes. He said, be like Gandhi. I said, I'd like to be. And he hit me on the head. And it was sort of not a crack on the head, and it was not a tap. It was in between. I don't, you know, it was, I didn't know in those days what was going on. But it started to interest me, like, be like Gandhi. I'm going to be like Gandhi, you know. So, you know, I got little glasses, and I thought, well, I can't be like Gandhi that way, you know. I mean, I'm not going to spin and carry a goat around with me everywhere I go, and that couldn't be what it is. What would it be like to be Gandhi in the West, you know, which is what I've spent 25 years trying to figure out. So slowly, over the years, I've begun to notice that when I'm working with the dying, or I'm working on a political action or something, I feel absolutely harmonious with my being, like this is just what I should be doing. And it began to dawn on me, feed people, serve people, be like Gandhi. And then the whole implication of what's called karma yoga, or the yoga of using your karma, the stuff of your life, to bring you to the one, using service as a vehicle to come to the one, started to open for me. And part of it was that Maharaji had named me Ram Dass, and Ram Dass means servant of God, and it's another name for the monkey Hanuman. And Hanuman was an aspect of the Hindu pantheon that lived only to serve God. He came into form. He was actually a form of Shiva that came into form in order to serve Ram in the incarnation Ram was in. And in the story of the Ramayana, which is an incredible story, Hanuman does these incredible things because he is so devoted to serving God, which is what karma yoga is about. It's serving the one through serving in the world, that he develops these incredible powers through this service. So having been named Hanuman, told to feed and serve people and be like Gandhi, I mean, I could only fight him so long. And so I surrendered more and more. And then I was doing service and meditating still, because I figured I'll meditate, it'll quiet me so I can do better service. He didn't say to meditate and do service, he just said to serve. So I was in India last fall, and I was with one of my Indian guru bhai, and I said to him, well, I'm doing service. He says, good. I said, I'm thinking of taking a little time off and, you know, lightening up the service I do. And he went silent for a moment. And he's my elder, you see. He said, Maharaji wouldn't like that. He just wants you to serve. Just keep serving. And he said it with such assurance. I mean, he probably is psychotic, but who knows? He said it with absolute certainty, you know. So I thought, oh boy, I better do it. So I thought, well, if that's true, why don't I really do it? See, that's the Western part. I mean, I'll do more. So I came back, and everybody that said, would you, yes. Would you, yes. Hello, oh, how can I help you? Yes, yes, you know. And I was like, 7 days a week, you know, 16 hours a day. Yes, sure, here, And I started to burn out. And I thought, he screwed me because, I mean, if I'm doing the right thing, what am I burning out for? Why aren't I getting freer? And then I understood that there is timing in method. You know, that you can't just, because what happened was the minute I saw the method, my mind overkilled and I grabbed it and said, I'll do it all. And yet I'm not ready to do it all. I really do need a little time to heal and be quiet. But what I've concluded is that karma yoga, this yoga, or what I now call the path of action for the West, is absolutely essence for Western people. Because it's not like, you mean you're going to be a renunciate? What about the rainforests? See, that's what you get when you're a renunciate. But how about, I'm going out to come to God through working on the rainforest issue. That sounds good, doesn't it? See how that sells in the West? Yeah. That's why I think it's a beautiful essence thing. And then when you're working on it, which one are you working on, the rainforest or coming to God? And that's the essence of the path of action.
Just look at your life as it is, just as it is, the universe as it is, and then ask, in what way is this a vehicle for bringing me back into balance in the universe so I am part of all of it and still separate? so that if you have children, children become your vehicle. If you have cancer, cancer becomes your vehicle.
If you have a spouse that's a complete louse, that spouse becomes your vehicle.
If you're living in an ecologically decaying universe, that becomes your vehicle. Instead of seeing all these things as obstacles to your path, you see them as the path itself. So if there's children being raised, you see that you're just an instrument through which divine wisdom and love and presence touches that child. In every part you play, it's as if slowly you as a separate entity ceases to be the determining. It's not me choosing, me acting, me wondering, me busy cultivating my career, all that stuff. That's all pleasant, but it's not very interesting. It's kind of trippy, and after a while it gets boring. I mean, I've always wondered what I'd be when I grew up, and I decided I wasn't going to grow up, so it was irrelevant. I mean, I didn't see why I have to grow up. That always has a kind of a creepy feeling to it. You know? Why can't we stay childlike? I have no idea what I'll do when I grow up. I don't know what I'm doing now. I don't even care. Because the more I have a model of what I'm doing, the more I get in my way, my own way. Well, I'm doing this. I don't have time, you know. If you're going to keep listening, to listen, there has to be a kind of an emptiness in you to hear. These are all different stages in the game. Stage, birth, socialization, becoming somebody, learning the game of ego, structure, control, mastery, effectiveness as a separate entity. Intellect being the steering mechanism, body being a vehicle. Good person, result, when it works. Okay? Successful, effective, charming, awakening. Awakening to the moment when you realize that isn't who you were at all. You got caught. Suddenly you see that you are in a prison of your own mind. Desire for escape. Spiritual practices to escape. First, you're upset because you were so caught, so you push away what you were stuck in, and you put it down. Like, you hate your ego, you hate your desires, you hate the world, you hate it all. It's all so thick and heavy and suffery and all. Push it away. Get high. Then you see, I'm high, but I'm not free. Because I can only be high in the country, not in the city. Can't be high around you, but I can be high around you. So you realize you're always standing on tiptoe. You're always having to organize everything so you can stay high. You begin to see it's a real nuisance. And you want to be free, so you're right here. Bring it on. Here I am. New situation. Turn around. Start to look at what brings you down instead of what gets you high. Some of them pretty heavy, some of them a little too heavy, the drama's too thick. See you later, I'll work with you later. Some of them just right, you can just take them and convert them, like, I'm no longer going to eat M&Ms. I mean, that's like a major game, okay? So then you don't have to get lost in not eating M&Ms, you just give up M&Ms. So don't take on big ones, take on ones you can handle. But after a while, you want the fire more and more. You start to go towards the fire, so you take on bigger and bigger ones. Till you're taking on death, or you're taking on sex, or you're taking on security, things like that. till finally you are in it and not in it. You're dancing through life. You're hearing the word dance or play or lila, the play of life. And you're sitting in that being in the heart. You're sitting quietly, just in the presence. And there's all this play and dance. For me, there's this kind of Ram Dasyana. Hello. Oh, yes, certainly. Watch me. I'm signing, hugging, smiling, posing, talking, meditating, going to the toilet, eating, drinking, you know. It's called the Ram Dass story, and it's, you say, it's Ram Dass. Yes. You know, and it's, and it's far out, because you and I are meeting and know that there are vehicles, and we know that there aren't vehicles. It's like, are you in there? I'm in here. Here we are. And that's what people feel. We feel that we're meeting behind the dance. We don't have to stay in the dance. I'm meeting Ram Dass. I'm Ram Dass. And we can do that and then really just jump behind it. And we do it through the hug, or we do it through the look, or we do it through the touch, or we do it just through the appreciation of presence, like at this moment. So then we start to live our lives more lightly. That wonderful line, angels can fly because they take themselves so lightly. We just start to live more lightly. It's not all such a federal case, you know? It's not such a will I, won't I, can I, can't I, should I, shouldn't I. Oh, God. Oh, you know that feeling of, oh, God, can I stand it? Oh, you know? Each moment's a new moment. It's a certain way of being with the moment of, yeah, right. Till you see your life stuff as your curriculum. You see family, friends, employer, employee, social structures, religion, community, nation state, ecosystem. You see all the service people, you way you serve and are served. You see it all as a web of phenomena, some of which are saying, I'm real, and they suck you in, and you lose your consciousness into them. And what your job is to take those and keep working with them until, ah, here comes motherness. Ah, here, you know, child's a baby, I'm mothering. Child's not a baby, I'm not mothering. It's far out to see the way in which you play your roles lightly. All the roles. The roles of being a living human. The role of being woman. The role of being man. The role of being addict. The role of being lover. The role of being responsible. The role of being employer. The role of being computer expert. The role of being servant, the role of being caring. They're just roles. They're roles. They're like, I wore a t-shirt yesterday and today I'm wearing this. These are my roles. See how I'm different? But inside, here I am, shirt or no shirt. And behind all your roles, here you are. And after a while, you begin to see how you milk your roles. How you want the identification with role to give your life meaning. I need you as my child because I need to be a mother.
But Ma, I'm 70 years old. I'll always be your mother. It's true, and it's interesting to find ways to the extent it's open to you, and it's open to you, whether it's open to the person you're with or not, it's open to you, to be able to fulfill roles impeccably without getting identified with them. What an art form. What an art form. To be the perfect student without being busy being a student. I remember when I was a professor, my ego needed professorness so much that when students came in, I really needed students to have that slightly servile, obsequious, you know, frightened quality around me. But the students, there were students that would come in and they weren't caught in the role. I mean, they'd do the necessary thing. They'd fill out the papers and then they'd say, I'd like to study the following thing and I've chosen you as my tutor and I wish to study this. And you'd see that they had nothing servile, nothing obsequious, nothing, you know, and I'd hate them. I mean, I'd hate them. Because they wouldn't, they weren't caught in the role. But the feeding out of life in human relations comes from being with people through roles, because you've got to be in roles with people, just like you're in bodies, without being caught in them. So that we meet and we do the dance, and all the time we're right here. And there's no dance. There's dance and no dance. Just at this moment, there is lecturing and there is listening, and behind lecturing and listening, here we are. Are you resting in the here we are-ness, or are you busy being a listener? If I'm busy being a lecturer, I need you to be a listener. If I am not, it is just that in this formal thing, there is the role of lecturer and there is the role of listener, and we're fulfilling our roles without getting lost in them. So here we are together. If you're only a listener, you're cutting yourself off from me and from all the rest of it. But isn't there a place in which there's just one of it here, just this shared awareness? Taste it, feel it. And yet there's listening and speaking. The identification with being the actor. Just notice it in your life. Because the actors always end up separating you. When you identify with an act, it separates you from another person. The identification with any role ends up being divisive. Divisive. Role of man, divisive. Role of the aspect of being in the role of man brings together. Identity as woman, divisive. Quality of being through role of woman, cohesive. Here we are together. What do we do? Well, let's play man and woman. Okay, who do you want to be? Identification with the actor, good one to work on. Identification with the role, good one to work on. One more, big one. Attachment to the fruit of the action. Big one. Attachment to the fruit of the action. Being attached to how it comes out. Have a child.
My child is going to be...
However, there are a lot of forces in the child and in the environment that you don't have control over, even if you keep them in a closet. You end up with your child or with any other human being, as you learn to quiet the mind more and more deeply into that being in the heart, into the emptiness, into the spaciousness, the listening mode, as that becomes deeper and deeper through just practice of listening, the stance of listening, the quietness of listening, the listening that comes from not being identified with wanting, but just hearing. You're listening more deeply, you begin to hear the gestalt, you begin to hear the totality, you begin to hear how the universe is, which includes what's in you and includes what's in the world. And out of that quietness, you hear what's called your dharma. You hear your way through. You hear what is appropriate for the next moment. You listen and you hear it deeply. You hear it intuitively. You do not necessarily hear it intellectually. And those of you that are so addicted to knowing you know through your intellectual mind have a hard time quieting down to start to trust the intuitive mind, because you've been so busy putting it down by saying, I don't know, I know this. The words for the intuitive feeling is, it feels right. Somehow I'm feeling a pull too. That kind of thing. Just those kind of tunings and feelings and pulls and pushes. And you find yourself doing an act that at that moment is the act you're doing. And you're doing it as consciously as you can do it at that moment. That is doing your dharma.
This is the end of side 5. Side 6 is already queued up for your listening.